You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Buon appetito.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, The G in Guts.
Waiter, there's a stand on my soup.
Yes. It's a shame it wasn't custard.
dear.
Righto, where's this chat disappeared to? I'm trying to get these.
Which?
I can't see you. You put a link of something. Okay, right. Hang on. Conversation. It's switched. It's leapt to the other side of the Skype from where it was last time.
Yeah.
Hey, no attention to the man behind the Skype window.
Right. Yeah, okay. I got my bearings again. It must be the work of an enemy stand up there in Skype. So they're trying to figure out what to do next. Because they know that the boss has got must have some elite guards who must be after them. What are we going to do?
But they probably have some time to plan, so they're going to stick in Venice for now. They're not going to leave instantly, because he didn't know we were going to attack him, so he probably doesn't have all his guys here.
But they have to go to a restaurant to get some lunch because of the Sex Pistols are whining that they're hungry.
Bucciarati, I know we're in a life or death perilous situation. We got to escape really quickly, but can we stop and get some food?
My children are starving.
Look at them. They're working so hard for you lately.
I did like his kind of cool guy line. I was like, we got to refill our guts. Yeah. Guts. We're manly dudes. We beat up randos in a restaurant. That guy had it coming, to be fair.
This guy doesn't look like an enemy stand user. Better make sure, though. And, it starts with fucking Narancia and Mustard's Lane, listening to him, and then Abacchio, he's just cameo finishing his bit of food, and then gets up and joins them.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect, because, he's kicking into him, and obviously Mister is very easy to go, is he a stand user? Let's kick the shit out of him. But he's just got let me just finish my wine.
This is after great. They've been discussing, hey, have you heard about these vegetarians? What's their deal?
Mister is so fucking stupid, it's kind of amazing. Can they wear shoes and shit? I suppose they have to wear sneakers. And it's can you imagine a granny wearing sneakers? Mad.
I dress like a basketball player, hilarious, guys. Can they eat milk or cheese? Come on. I mean, how would you enjoy pizza? What the fuck?
Again, this feels like a conversation that Araki has had, either from one side or the other of the conversation.
I feel like it's mocking people like that because it's Mister talking about it. Also, vegans are a different thing, dude. So, that's a separate complication for him.
Yeah, they're out a new thing, I suppose the terminology of it back then.
It's set in now.
It's 2000. So. I think, we knew what vegans were in the year 2000.
Yeah, but...
time travel shenanigans.
Don't use fucking Windows 95 computers to try and put together a burned photograph either.
But they are teenage thugs, most of them, so that may be the excuse.
They have limited worldviews.
Yeah. Even the one who's in his 20s and was a cop seems to also have limited worldviews.
The mob is always social media, I got, man.
They got Trish is their lead, and she comes out of her shell.
Yeah, after the rancher is saying, hey guys, you shouldn't taste fucking Trish because it might stress around. I kind of know where she's coming from, so I think, rather than putting any more kind of further strain or grief upon her, let's just kind of keep it well quiet. As she's saying that, she's right here. She heard everything.
And she's got a clue for them, that her mother met, the boss in Sardinia. And he even wiped his identity way back then when he left Earth.
Yeah.
So, but they think if there's anything to be found about him, it'll be there.
So we've got to go all the way back down south again. Come all the way up, but nearly as far north as you can. Come all the way fucking back south, Jesus Christ.
And the Narancy is like, oh, she's even more strong-willed than I am about this whole thing. What am I doing here? And then he suddenly spots that his spoon has gone missing as he was stirring his soup.
Yeah, goes to the like next table for a spoon and then scoops out a bitten spoon in his soup.
That's a bit pathetic. The kitchen about this. This shouldn't be in there.
And, oh no, there's a shark in his soup. Which is the stand of
Squallow.
Squallow, who it's, we see with his... Tiziano?
How do I say that now? Tiziano.
Okay. Yeah. I get the feeling they're a couple. I wonder whether on the page it just looks more like they're in the pages of a glossy magazine posing. But I think having a performance with it makes them feel more like a couple.
Yeah.
I feel like this is as most as like he can stick in, yes, these characters are homosexuals, without just out and out saying it. It's like, how much can I get away with here? How about just draping them off each other? How about them just, like, lips up to each other's head? Like, how much can I get away with here? Yeah.
Yeah, and the little shark stands swimming around. That's also, like, can teleport between liquids. So when Ranchi says, oh, well, it's in the soup. Well, no, it's not. What are you talking about? There's a shark in the soup. It is, what's it? It's called the Clash. This is Clash.
Yeah.
Quite God. Which we're able to crush here, which is, you know, that's what that kind of works too. It almost like, it works pretty well, in natural life forms, because it does sound like it could be saying crush as well, because the way
they
work the L's in that language. So
that was a clever way to do it, and I was like, I thought he did say that, and I was like, oh yeah, of course.
But Ranta can't say much more because Shark Stein bites his fucking end of his tongue off.
Yeah, and then he has to deal with fucking Mister. It was like, what's wrong, Narancia? What are you pointing at? He says, looking at him rather than where the fuck he's pointing.
What's that, boy? There's blood coming out of your mouth.
What's the fucking saying? Like, only a fool looks at the pointed finger and not where it's pointing or something like that. I don't know. It's some... thing like that. And it was just like, I was getting very frustrated with Mister in this episode.
Luckily, Giordo is here, and so he stabs his trachea with Bruno's... Is it Bruno or Mister's pen? I can't remember.
It's Mister's pen that he had in his boot. It's like, Mister, do you have a pen? And he stabs him in the throat to clear the airways, because obviously I assume his throat is filling up with blood or something, yeah.
And he explains, okay, well, it's going to take a while, but I shall turn this pen into a new tongue for him, and...
And presumably also fix the hole that I put jammed into his fucking throat.
So he recovers from the wound, but then Narancia discovers that he cannot tell the truth.
Yeah. So what was the stand, Narancia? Was it small, fast? No, it was big and slow. Wait, I mean, it was, yeah, enormous and slow, but powerful. Okay, if it was enormous and slow and powerful, how the fuck did we miss it? Like, it went that away. Yep, no, it didn't.
Went into the men's room. Well, okay, if you say so. I did say so.
And that is that's because the other member of the pair, Tiziano, his stand talking heads, has latched onto the ranch's tongue, a little gross, little tiny little tongue man, and it's forcing him to say the opposite of what he means.
Initially, I thought like it grew back as his tongue, as part of Giorno's power. But I guess it's like controlling what he's saying, because it also causes him to point in the wrong direction, that kind of thing. Its literal thing is it makes you say the opposite of what you mean. So it has him point in the opposite direction from where the stand currently is, that kind of thing.
It's most of the time, I think you're just compelled, whether by your actions, your words, or otherwise, to just like. Convey the opposite meaning of what you intend. So I think doesn't hear, but obviously you got to try and write something, and even writing something down, you can't put it down correctly either.
It's like some kind of like If there was some kind of Tourette's that made you say exactly the opposite of what you mean.
Especially the curse from Liar Liar, the famous Jim Carrey comedy. Which, you know, you're correct. Not going to say that could not be a reference. That's a great idea for a stand.
Like, the whole thing of, like, saying exactly the opposite of what you mean, and the whole shark in the soup, it's like this was a mishmash of two jokes as a threatening situation. It's very odd.
Yeah, I mean, at least the stand doesn't look like a cat.
No, it's a flower. It looks like a cat. Is it a cat? It looks like a flower.
Also, it can turn your tongue into a prehensile tongue.
It has full control over, it's got total control over the tongue, at least. And yeah, let's lick this bathroom.
Yep.
Naraki and his grossness of licking in bathrooms.
Yeah. It's like Naranchi is obviously trying to tell him this is like a tiny little shark stand that can like teleport to any body of water that's within range of it, and it can like fucking bite chunks out of you. So he sees the guys going into the toilets and it's like, shit, there's fucking leaky pipes and taps and everywhere in there.
So they're looking in the bathroom stalls and he has to distract them by pissing in it.
Yes.
I kind of love that bit where it's like, everyone look at me. Look at me, I'm pissing.
And you know, it's like, you know, now you know what he's trying to say.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good giveaway where it's just like, hey, I really want you to look at me pissing. And they're like, what, are you a fucking pervert? And it's like, think about it, guys. He does. Look at his face. Look at his pained expression as he says this.
Oh, yeah. Also, his tongue turns a tap on. And then later on, his tongue slits his own wrist.
When his tongue pulls a knife on him, that's fucking amazing. good stuff.
Oh, it was a lot like that bit in the Tick the cartoon where he gets a mustache, he's got a fire sword mustache.
Yeah. There's so much comedy fucking gold in this episode, but like done in the most threatening way possible. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's not quite the same as the Evil Dead thing of like
a limb. Oh, the hand, yeah.
But there's a little bit of that there as well with the tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your body working against you, obviously.
Yes, plotting.
Thank God Giorno somehow puts the pieces together out of nothing like he always tends to do.
You know, this situation seems super fucking weird, and I'm going to be the only one who's being anyway sensible.
I'm going to guess it's because he's been with Narancia the least, and so the others have had to deal with
his
years
bullshit.
Of his bullshit. This may well be very much in character for him.
Why didn't you fucking take your dick out and start pissing while we're trying to investigate a crime? What the fuck? That's like, just like you, man. And Giorno's like, that's a weird thing for a person to do.
That's always the way that never comes up. I always say it just to enable these stories to happen, but it was like rule number one when you're a gang of fellow stand users on the run or being attacked by enemy stand users. If something really weird happens, always assume it's probably an enemy stand user.
If I had a stand and I knew of other people with stands and I didn't think I was currently under attack, I would assume weird shit that would happen was the work of an enemy stand user, including whenever I put my drink down and then I walk away and then I forget where the hell I left my drink. I would assume that's the work of an enemy stand user because this is an unusual situation. That kind of thing.
I don't fuck around. This is a very important rule. People can literally get killed over this.
Yeah, pretty much.
And especially as well, on the run from a boss who sent like a squad of secret hitmen to try and track us down and kill us all. Not a time for any kind of weird humor around here, please.
I guess it was them being set off by being attacked by some rando in a restaurant. And that didn't turn out to be an enemy stand user, so we're probably good for the day. That was probably the one thing that would happen to us today.
They also used him to test their food in case he'd been poisoned.
Yeah, I just like, might as well test the food to see if, fucking. It's like, and Narancia, like, did freak out when he realizes, like, oh, that wasn't an enemy stand user. Oh, shit, I'm going to have to pay for the dry cleaning for his suit. And Mist is like, no, you could put a button there and you wouldn't notice. Fucking dumbasses. Just all so stupid people.
Have you seen what they wear? They were putting buttons.
That's true, actually.
They'd be
probably festooning think that's
their trousers with buttons if they allowed them to.
dear.
Also, we got new opening and ending themes.
Yes. It's no Fightin' Gold, but you know.
Like
Fightin' Gold is just, that was coming out the gate. All guitars blazing.
I think I prefer this new one.
it's going to have to take a while to grow on me, because I do miss fighting gold now. As soon as it's gone. I it's not that I miss so horny, but it did make me laugh every time it came on, so I'm going to miss that, I think.
So we've now got Modern Crusaders by Enigma.
Yeah, which they seem to have gotten the rights to, because you couldn't use the name of the band in Part 4 at all. So, there we go.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Well, fucking, didn't they... What's the band who does So Horny? They released, like, the single again with, like, JoJo's on the cover.
Nice.
oh, fuck, this has brought us new fucking relevance and popular again.
You know what I pressed for around? Everyone was saying, fun, that guy within the Enigma sound was a real dickhead, but Enigma band, not so bad. So because remember, a young audience watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, like new anime series, and they might not have heard of any of these music references, but they know what they are because they're watching JoJo long enough to know these are actual world bands, real bands, and can go and listen to them, and they do, and they kind of like them. So,
it's free advertising. What's the problem?
Would the point they never would have encountered in a regular day-to-day, because obviously these bands were probably around long before they were popular Whatever they're listening to, so take the opportunity. This is great advertising. Entertaining music video references.
So what's the cliffhanger in this one? The shark jumps out his tongue cuts his hands, and he's trying to keep Giorno away because Giorno's trying to heal him.
Yeah, he cauterizes his wounds using the steam that he got out of, he shot a pipe with Aerosmith.
Yeah,
did he? I thought he seemed to like fire bullets outside of like the pipe so quickly.
Oh, that it made it hot.
It made a pipe red hot.
It was one or the other anyway. But yeah, he did. He did cauterize his wounds on the pipe, whichever way.
But then by doing that, he damaged the pipe. Water leaks out, and there's a huge puddle on the floor. Big fucking version of Clash jumps out and takes a bite out of Giorno's neck, and it's like, shit, he's fucking toast, because that's our healer, dude.
Yeah.
You kind of need him to not be getting bicycling out of him like that.
If the cleric goes down, you're fucked. Is it as big as the body of water it's in? Because it was huge when it was in the canal, and it was obviously tiny in his tears at one point.
It's
like a goldfish. It takes on the size of whatever bowl it's in. Mm. Okay.
Oh, so it's at the kind of hidden depth, and obviously, it's only a puddle of water on the floor. It couldn't be that deep, so they can kind of swim through the water or dive underneath it, even though it shouldn't be able to do that.
Like a street shark.
Yes.
Okay.
It wasn't standing up for everything right, though.
Quite the opposite.
Not enough radical skateboards.
I mean, it's teamed up with specifically a liar, so yeah.
Next week it is an episode called Clash and Talking Head. Or Crash and Talking Mouth.
Was it Talking Mouth or Talking Face? I forgot.
Talking Mouth, yeah.
What was that one of the ones we guessed? I feel like that's close to what we thought. Anyway.
Chattering cranium, I don't know. I'm trying to go for like an alliteration thing whenever I get my guesses in.
It's generally like the simplest one is the closest one they're going to do.
If we can change zipper, one word. Man. Just trying to describe a thing that it is or does. Zipper man. Talking head. Talking mouth.
I'm surprised they didn't go like something like zippy finger or something like that, because you could nearly hear that when he's saying it. You know?
Well, that's why if we're in there in the virus room getting the big butts, right? Cut your old subs. One day a week. Just for this.
we won as a stand consultancy service.
I'm just imagining like a Mad Men type situation, a bunch of people around with drinks and cigars, and they're like, Zipperman. It's like, brilliant.
Baby
cocaine
head
for everyone.
Ah, yes.
See, I wasn't planning on doing an end of year quiz this year, but I think I did have the idea of like having a competition where you get a name of a band and then you'd have to guess if it was a stand, figure out if it was a stand, what they would be called on the Crunchyroll subs of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Oh, so it's like one step removed. Like what is if I say sticky, if I say zipper band, it's like, what's that band?
Oh, no, as if that, oh, that would be an even better version of the game. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be an even better version of the game. Yes, I wasn't thinking of that.
You can make it more complicated, like pick a fucking song by the pick a song by the artist formerly known as Zipperman. It's like, Jesus Christ, so many steps removed, you just confuse the fuck out of people. It would work.
That's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for this week, and we got more to discuss though on the podcast within the podcast. It's Let's Go, and let's go to Dororo. Episode 10, The Story of Tahomaro, where you have to destroy a giant enemy crab.
I quite like that mosh, actually. The big crab.
Oh, the face shell.
Gross face in the back, yeah.
So, like, it didn't have, like, human eyes, but the crab's eyes were roughly where the human eyes would be. I thought there were going to be eyes on the claws the way it was standing, but I was like, ah, okay. Slightly disappointed.
So we open with Hikimaru and Dororo is explaining, I've heard of this great place we should go to where you can, white rice is as much as you can possibly want to eat. We can escape this famine and, live the high life.
Mm.
And then that's the last we see of them till the end of the episode.
Mm. Well, we know where they're going to. So. what's the only kind of place around here that's had any kind of like
luck,
prosperity in the last couple of years?
Yeah, yeah, and I did like it just kind of like as a little establishing that Doro is actually that Hikimaru is talking a little, just
yes,
like words and bits, but yeah, he's conversating, I guess.
They find like a gorilla demon at the start. They're like wrapping up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode we haven't seen, that kind of way.
He's not a valuable one. He's heading back from it, but hey.
Yeah, because there's like a little pause where Dororo's like, has anything grown back?
Yeah, I think that's why he's like, ah, fuck's sake, that one was useless. So there must be like some equivalent, like that bird in the woods wasn't.
Yeah, what did they just call them, like ghouls, the ones which aren't giving him his powers back or something?
Yeah. That might be it. Cause again, that'd be the same with the spider woman from before. Obviously she wasn't one of the main demons. She was just a ghoul.
Yeah. Or part of the body you can do without.
the appendix.
Oh yeah. That's just going to cause you trouble, Hikimaru. You don't want that one back. Yeah. More trouble than feeling pain or having feet instead of swords.
And then the rest of the episode is the story of Tahomaru, his little brother. What I really liked about this episode is that it gives you a lot of sympathy for him and his two bodyguards slash friends. And also his dad.
He's in a really shitty situation where it's like, he wants to do good. He wants to fucking be let in on the secrets because he can see it's eating his fucking parents up. Like,
yes. Yeah, what it felt to me was like getting to see, because we've had like 9 episodes of how shitty it is everywhere else, and seeing what it's like in Daigo's area, it's like, is what he did to Hikimaru worth the peace and prosperity he's brought to his land?
It's a question of like, is it okay for one person to, like, he assumed that it's like, well, and then that kid was born with no fucking skin, so, and he's just gonna fucking die, cause, you know, that's what happens. And it's just like, well, that was worth it, considering I saved my kingdom. And then he's like, wait, fucker's still alive? Fucker's going around killing the motherfuckers who are keeping my people safe? This sucks. It's like, is one innocent child suffering worth all these people, like, living, not in the shitty fucking feudal Japan constant warfare place that this is everywhere else in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're also getting the sense that as he kills all these demons, that the risk increases to his land.
Yeah, as in like, oh, that other fucking crowd is like putting an army on the edge of the our borders, and he's like, and it's like, yeah, if it doesn't rain for another couple of months, I mean, like, this year's rice crop is fucked, and it's just like.
Yeah, they're doing super well. They're doing better than what they're, but it's still.
They're not currently at war, but they're fucking threatening war and starvation and famine and everything, yeah. It's right on the doorstep.
Yeah. So, Tarbo's trying to figure how he tries to figure out what's eating his parents. Is he kidnaps his dad's spy as a spy and they drug him?
Thing.
That was where mine were, having just watched that Man in the Wasp recently.
But neither are, like, you know, underworld demons you form packs and make skinless babies with, and the baby comes back with, like, robot limbs to cut you down. So, if that's where you're, like...
At least they're not going for, like, straight-up torture, because that doesn't work either, you know. Like, yes, your parents do have a terrible secret. They sold a baby to demons. I don't know, I'm just making shit up at this stage.
But they don't get that far, because it's like, what's the deal with the baby? Like, why did he cast the baby out? And before the spy, even under duress, under fucking chemical fucking persuasion here, tries to bite his own tongue off, but doesn't succeed because the drugging is kind of weak in his biting, but
it's like,
still...
the fact that he's resisting and trying to bite his own tongue off in order to not speak the truth about it with this apparently totally real and effective drug that lets you tell the truth. How many people are in on it? Is it, like, maybe it's not just the dad and the man. Maybe, like, fucking everyone knows, you know? Oh, that's the Lord's first son. He sold him to demons in order so we could be prosperous. And we're all kind of a little choked up about it, but, you know, fuck it. You gotta live.
Well, since anybody can just wander into that little small temple where the demon statues are fucking all...
Well, he killed the priest who mined it, so yeah. I guess anyone can walk in now. Okay, so one priest and an innocent, your own innocent child. I guess that's the cost to keep everyone else okay. Yeah, I'm guessing it's going to bring that kind of moral question into question.
Yeah, and so yeah, he goes off with his two mates, and they see there's like a problem in this village. And they go down, and the fishermen explain they're being attacked by a giant crab.
And these samurai that were passing through don't want to do anything about it. And he says, it's like, well, they're my fucking people, so I gotta help them out. You know, he's got the same kind of, I guess, drive as his dad, but his comes across as more altruistic and less selling your child to demons.
Yeah, but so he doesn't know that part, so.
If he's
actually been, like, taking his cues from his dad, he doesn't realize see this land right here, people are fun living and growing crops, when my dad did all that all by himself with no handouts from anybody.
Yeah. Like, he sees his dad as this great man, and that's why he wants to be let in on whatever secret is eating them up. But,
And also, he's not willing to sacrifice his two attendees / friends.
Yeah, they're like, we'll just jump in the crab's mouth with a bomb and blow it up from the inside. And they're like, that's not happening.
No. We can do this, guys. Because, these aren't just some chumps. All these guys, even Tamar, they got some moves.
They got special thingy. Man has a big, like, click-in fucking club.
Yeah.
Yep. Pretty sweet.
Smashing crab shells at that. Hyogo, I think his name, and Mutsu is the lady. She's just fun doing all Legolas shit with the bow and arrow. And we see a guy go up with a sword trying and fight the crab initially, and it's like, it bounces around.
Oh, we've lost you there, Niall.
It takes one of the arms off. Oops. I'm here.
You're back again. Yeah. Yes, we got to took one of the arms off, but there was a blank before that.
Yeah, like, you know, this one guy tries to attack the crab with a sword and it bounces off, but Taramaro just goes in there and takes like a limb off this crab with one blow. But that could be because Yoga might crack the shell a bit, give him a bit of purchase, but still.
I think that was the idea, that they were kind of working together better, because initially your one's arrows were just bouncing off it, and then he kind of cracked the shell, and then she was just firing multiple arrows into the same spot that it stands after. It was nice, kind of like combo stuff, but yeah, no, they had some moves, all right.
Yeah, it just makes me think of earlier on when he was doing his sword practice, and it's like, were they letting him win, or is he that good? He seems to be that good, actually.
Yes. Seems to be at least pretty fucking good. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not like this fucking coddled little upstart guy with notions about himself. He's actually like a character with ambitions and skills and strength in his own right. So like,
yeah,
he won't be some guy that Jackie Morrow's going to be able to kind of trample straight over on the way to the probably tragic finale of this.
Yeah, I like what we've seen of him before. It seemed to be suggesting that he's what Hyakumaru would have been if he had been allowed to grow up in a normal family kind of situation. But based off this one, is like it's more so definitely that contrast, sure. But it's also the contrast that sorry, I've freaking lost my train of thought. It's also that this guy is his own guy and he's admirable in his own right, and he's trying to do right by people. Like, Hyakumaru has kind of been doing right by people by accident, but as he's growing more of himself back, he's kind of gaining that reconnection to humanity and being able to make decisions of who, like, if should you kill a person or should you let a demon go, that kind of thing. Whereas this guy already, it kind of starts from a moral place. I mean, like, it's built on the lie that the entire fucking, that kingdom is built on, but he's still like a good guy. So it's not, he's a rival, absolutely, but he's not a bad guy, which is a really good way to play it. Yeah.
Yeah. What's going to happen here is that, Daigo, he's not like one of the demons or what, but he still is some part tied to the curse. So to get something like really important back to Hyakumaru, he's probably going to have to kill his father to break the curse entirely. And so it's going to be a bit like Takamaru's got to decide, ooh, am I loyal to my father who's known my life, or am I loyal to this long lost brother who's probably going to meet and still have some accord about themselves?
Sure.
And confused by it. And am I loyal to my father who's known my life, or am I loyal to my brother who I've just met but has clearly been wronged by my father? Which do I decide?
Yeah.
I would hope anyway, because that's something that seems the kind of way this would go. One of the ways it could go.
I feel like it's definitely going to go the way of tragedy. I feel like those two attendants who are cool and nice and willing to sacrifice themselves for not only their people but their lord. It's like, oh, you guys are probably fucked, dude. You guys are too cool to survive this fucking this hot mess.
They'll go down like champs though, whenever they do.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, like, fuck it, they could go down fighting Hyakumaru at this fucking rate, you know? It's just like, oh, then you'd feel really bad about it, because it's like, I like these guys, but, you know.
Yes, I think they may be too loyal when it comes to...
They're loyal, they're good, they're self-sacrificing, they're fucked in this world, man. In the world, not this world, I'm not that fucking cynical. I mean, in the world that's presented here.
Yeah, but at the same time, they also... drug people to ask questions of them.
But I mean, like, they didn't torture. They didn't resort to anything underhanded. It's, okay, like, using truth serum on people isn't exactly a thing a nice guy does.
Yeah, I don't know whether Mutsu is supposed to be a woman or just... Because I think they've mentioned they're called brothers in this episode.
Yeah.
But it is...
Oh, okay.
It is a woman playing them. So I don't know whether that's going to be...
Is that a reveal as well, similar to
Dororo? Dororo, or
It could be
just something they've put in.
Yeah, well, the character design is sort of androgynous, so it's kind of thrown away because again, could they be disguising themselves for the purposes of their duty?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, like, that's happened so many times in history, so that's not unusual. Hmm.
My favorite bit of this is because, well, the first attack, the crab remembers. Hang on a minute. We're in water. This is my advantage.
Yeah, I did like his reaction of, oh, this crab isn't entirely just a stupid fucking crab.
And decides to stop being above water, get his arms cut off, and goes underwater and starts trying to sink their boats.
Yeah, it's like, then they'll be fucked. And they have tied the boats to the land, so they're not that stupid. Yes. And they're just like, oh, we'll just pull ourselves in.
Yeah, I like the fact that they're not that stupid. And because that ties, that's like a nice bit of foreshadowing for how they... deal with the crab is through what have we got an advantage over the crab with? Science.
And I did like even him like kind of looking at the lay of the land, and it was more so it looked like he was looking over the land. It was like, I must protect this land, but he was looking for like, where the fuck could we do this attack? I was like, oh, give me a piggyback. That bit was kind of just funny and weird. But him kind of going like, oh, fucking perfect, let's make a levee.
Yeah, there's an inlet there, we can drain it out into some other land. So they get a load of like a montage of them building sluice gates. And as soon as you build, if you've seen a sluice gate in real life, and as soon as you see them building one, you go, ah, I get their plan.
Yeah. And even if you didn't get it because you weren't familiar with it, like you can see pretty effectively how it works. So.
Yes. So they lure it into this, inlet, then close it off, then drain it of water. And ha, crab, now you're on our terms.
Yeah. Yeah, fucking that crab up for a little while as well. Taking chunks out of the poor guy. but it learns.
Yeah, I like the fact that, like, its initial thing is, I'm a giant fucking crab, I'm just going to fight you. And then it's like, oh, shit, okay, this isn't going to work. I'm going to throw shit at the gate and break it up.
Yes. And that the bit where he breaks the sluice open and then everything after that bit, I think is my favorite animation in the entire show so far.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Mm, mm. Yeah. There's a lot of great things to enjoy in it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, like the water animation, the people being tossed about, Toramaru like sticking his sword in the ground to stop himself from being dragged away.
The big guy fucking grabbing motherfuckers and throwing them onto land.
Yes,
that's badass.
They're getting swallowed, but then oh, here comes Dororo.
Hakimaru even.
Hakimaru rather, yes, sorry.
Yeah, I keep doing that as well. Don't worry about it.
It's come to there that they've lured the crab onto land, it shot bits off it, it's wounded, it's like got like 1% health left, and Hakimaru comes in for the kill.
It's not even that he like takes all the credit after they did all the damage. It's like, cause your man, the big guy, is currently in its mouth just trying not to be bit. It could have went pretty bad for them if not for random sword-armed stranger showing up. Who is that mysterious man with a very similar crest on his pouch? I don't know what you call that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was said at the start, because Dororo saw that and was asking about it. Mm. I mean, how would Hayakimaru even know? Because he can't see it yet himself.
Like, he couldn't even feel it up till recently, no. So... Yeah.
Yeah, good episode. And now we're kind of into, like, I guess the second stage of the story, because all our leads are now in the same area.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely going to set up better where it is. I'm kind of curious as to, like, will Hakimaru getting all his body parts back, getting revenge or whatever you'd call it, justice, will that be the bad ending? The fact that this entire kingdom is going to go to shit now?
To know.
There's a few ways it could go, and I feel like all of them, there's always going to be some fucking tragedy, no matter what you do.
Oh, yeah. But
there's no happy ending in this.
The path we taped towards could reason that tragedy. It could long, circuitous, and hopefully surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I know how it ends in the comic, which is it kind of sort of ends, and then it like hints at further adventures, which it never tells.
Hakimaru will return in Thunderball.
But yeah, I'm gonna guess it'd probably do something similar to the comic. Which would be good, cause I like how the comic ends in a way that feels cleverer than the way these stories normally end.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm not going to look it up just so no, I'm even but if they go with time, that exact ending that I'll still be...
The Hayakimaru in that story, as I've pointed out, is quite different to in character to this one. In that he's got some.
I think he's slowly getting it. I feel like by the end he will have like a personality, if that makes sense.
That's true. Because he's only... I mean, he's killing these creatures because they need to be killed, because they're a danger. He has no knowledge yet of what... the situation with his dad and the fact that he's the demons are the cause of this situation in the first place. So
yeah, but I mean, like, he's already learned that there's some of the white fucking glows that he does want to kill because fuck those guys. There's some demons that he doesn't want to kill because they're actually okay. Yeah,
because the setup is like weirdly like a vengeance story, but he has no reason yet.
He just coincidentally is. He's coincidentally on the path to get what was taken from him. It's kind of how it's turning out. Yeah. That might have been part of the Buddha blessing at in the beginning as well, though. It giving him the strength enough to be able to take this back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, Mob Psycho 100 2, Episode 10, Collision, Power Type. So much stuff happened in this, I can't remember exactly what happened in it, except the ending is great with the Body Improvement Club and Dimple.
Oh, so good. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't for, like, the entire thing with the crab and the water and everything, it's like, I feel like this is my favorite bit of animation this week.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
God damn, that was fucking sweet.
Yeah. a lot of it are just sort of encounters as the guys from Claw have occupied like a tower in the middle of the city, and they've like demolished a lot of the surrounding buildings to kind of form a kind of barricade or moat, whatever you want to call it, around that, and they've all of their goons encamped around there fending off any of the security forces. So
yeah, and the Big Five are wondering if the boss has done anything to the regular goons. Because it's like, these guys shouldn't be able to topple buildings, even if they team up. That seems a little above their pay grade, but okay, alright. Mm. And, I did like all of them sitting in the, finally caught up with the news, sitting watching the news going like, should we do something? He's like, no, this is a job for the police. I don't think this is any business of ours.
Like, hang on now, what's this? Oh, hang on, it's your insurance company. Hello? Yes, it's a call for the fire insurance. What do you mean, Cap? You can't find a cause. Ever hear of pyrokinesis? What?
that's not covered under act of God. Come on.
We gotta take these bastards down. They're gonna destroy the city otherwise.
even saving the day, he's doing for selfish reasons. Fucking brilliant.
Then they go out and start sending various vehicles telekinetically towards the building as distraction.
Yeah, I love the goon's reaction. It's like, oh no, it's the telekinetic police.
Ritsu, Sho, and Sho's three mates run into the guy who can control plants from the Big Five. Or the Ultimate Five, or whatever they're called. I'm going to call them Big Five because of Giant Robo.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely what they're going for. He leaves his three boys to clean it up, and even the plant guy has to recognize it's like perfect attack, defense, and support.
Because Ritsy wasn't impressed at first, and then it's nice that it turns out, no, they are actually really good.
Well, the guy has a giant paper fan. He looks like an asshole.
But he's kind of like the baby version of the guy in the Big Five who has the umbrella can do the same thing, but much bigger.
Like, it's not about using a cool psychic sword guy who's one of our heroes. It's about using something that shouldn't work like that. That's so much cooler.
Yeah, there's one bit where the guy with the umbrella expresses a bit of doubt.
Is it where he takes the hit from the plant guy and then the heel guy?
Oh, it's just his facial expression. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't express it, but yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
The guy to your umbrella, Serizawa, who works for the pet. Or do you mean the dude?
Because
the guy Serizawa with the umbrella Claw, he's at all for this because he gets a kind of nice motivational speech from the... What's that fucking guy's name? I keep forgetting it. Shaw's dad, evil dude.
It begins with a T.
Anyway, it's got a whole like thing about going, oh, well, like you're very important here, and which one of a place that like, you know, where you can use that power to kind of live freely? Because no, my whole thing is no, because I have this power, I could kind of do whatever I want. So I could, you know, wasn't restrained by anything the society could bring about. And couldn't you be when you want to be at that too? So someone says, yes, I'd love to be the head of a major corporation like you.
Yeah, like, and the other guy reacting is like, dude, do you think you're in a company right now? Do you think this is a job?
He wears like, a suit, hangs out in our tall buildings, I just naturally assumed.
Oh, that's right, they took over Seasoning City? They mentioned another place. This.
Yeah.
They take over Seasoning City because your man is from here and doesn't like it, but he knows he's way around it, he knows what the people are like, and also this fucking tower has the best omurice.
Is not very important, but I will destroy it all because, you know, and to prove to myself that I'm not attached to any earthly or any material or emotional desires, like I am free to pursue my goals. So
but if I'm going to destroy the world, I'm going to start at the place where I can get at least one of these fucking delicious rices in before I end it all.
Yeah. And we're seeing a little again that mirror of Reagan a little bit where he is quite supportive of his guys. Like he was just talking to Serizawa over there and then like, oh, but he's pulling them, like, directing them towards evil end. But it's similarly like manipulating them as well to use their powers to achieve his aims.
But he does also kind of set up the fact that it may come later on is that Reagan's going to point out this all to them and...
Yeah. It's like, I know a fucking con when I see it. I'm a con.
You've done it already, so this season even, so why not do it again?
And even like, man's thing of like, what he says is like, hey, if any of you fucking died or whatever, I just probably wouldn't care. I'd probably continue on because I've decided to take over the world. And once I set my heart on something, I do it. And they're all really inspired by his speech of, which included him saying is like, fuck you guys. But he's just that damn inspiring. But yeah, it'll be nice. I feel like the turnabout's going to be really well earned in this. Yeah.
Yeah, so Regan and they run into the guy who can make himself super muscular.
Psycho steroids.
Well, they're hiding with Mob in a fridge.
Yes.
And a bunch of guys come out. He's like, hey, sorry, guys, you're psychics. You can check me for psychic powers. Check it out. Got none. This kid's psychic, but I need to get him to the hospital because obviously, you know, he's unconscious. So if you just let me through, if you just scoot over a little bit. And he's like, oh, I'll pat him down. He's got something in his pocket. He's like, don't worry, it's just men's cologne. But it's continuity. Like he's had that literally in his pocket the whole fucking time, and he's like, "Oh yeah, fucking, I forgot about this bit of continuity."
Aerosol curse.
And it makes you feel bad or something. It's cursed to make you.
You just feel very drowsy and
cursed to make you feel drowsy.
It's knockout gas, but it's knockout curse instead.
Yeah. Handy dandy bottles.
But yeah, that just makes him more powerful, and so Dimple has to possess Mob's body.
And get bitten off the wall because Reagan's volleyball skills are useless here.
Yeah. Mr. Magic looking guy betrays them, which that does again make sense from what I was saying last week. Is that he was unconscious, so he never got to hear Regan's speech at the end of the previous season.
He hasn't been inspired.
No.
Yeah.
And then there's another bunch of them who are making their way through the sewers, and they run into the guy who can teleport. Yeah, and Mob gets hit so hard when the other guy catches up with him that he, like Dimple, leaves his body.
Yeah, he can't ghost as fast as Mob's body is traveling through the air. He can't move that fast because we've seen him have trouble running before. There's a speed limit on ghosts, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and luckily the Body Improvement Club spot him flying through the air and catch him.
It's lucky the police cordoned off that road and they took a different scenic route on their jog.
There's a bit with the telepathy club partway through where it sounds like they wanted the blonde one spotted something exciting, but now he's just got something really good on his gacha game.
Oh wow, dude!
that was great. Yeah,
immediately that just started. I was just watching the news. Oh my god, the city is like being destroyed by fucking powers. Guys, fucking got ultra rare and grand blue fantasy. No shit, what the fuck? Did you spend money getting that? No.
And I did like, yeah, obviously that's coming off the Body Improvement Club because like the only way they've been affected by the city being destroyed is they have to change their jogging route, which yeah works out good in the plot for Mob.
But they won't.
That fucking scene is so good.
Yes, because they all get beaten up, but Goda refuses to allow him to hurt Mob. And so yeah, he just puts his body over the top of Mob as this guy just constantly pounds on him and pounds on him, and then all of a sudden he gets up, becomes super strong, and then we see that he's got red dimples on his cheeks.
Yeah.
Because it's good. It's great because you feel great for Goda, and you also feel great that Dimple loves Mob so much. And
like I was initially thinking, it was like, wait, is he like unlocking his psychic power of super muscle? It's like, oh, it's just Dimple and his own manly courage. Okay,
well, yes, because what Dimple does isn't he like releases your maximum potential, and so this guy,
the fucking speech is like, it's like psychically powered muscles could be healthy living.
Yeah,
muscles have been built through training and effort.
Good stuff.
And also that's like Dipper respecting that one. Yes, these guys don't need any fun powers. They just fun huge dudes that out. This other guy is just fucking relying, being lazy, taking the fun fast food to get in the huge bod. These guys work out every day, and they're who fucking Mob calls his friends, and they call him friend, and like, it's greater in his life, especially right now. I can bless their bodies and beat this dude up.
Yeah, and again, your man's little speech about like how basically Mob inspires all of them, and I was just like, fucking hell, these guys are the best. They're just the best guys.
Yeah. And he also works as like, oh, this is what Mob could have done if he wanted to take the shortcut. This is what people are always encouraging him to do.
And even they respect him for the fact that he's not taking any shortcuts. He's always passing out because of anemia and shit. And but he still stays with them. He stays running behind them. Yeah.
And he finally wakes up at the end of the episode. And also Ritsu and Sho show up where Sho's dad is.
So more fighting to come.
Yeah.
Apparently amazing fighting, I hear, because yeah, I've been trying my best to
defend
myself.
It's
just diving into it immediately, because it just seems like one scene seems to just like, build upon the other. But that was good animation. Check out this great animation. Then, oh yeah, well, I got this signed up. It was like, stop.
Stop trying to outdo yourself. I already like you.
In the same week that they put out like a long trailer for One Punch Man Season 2, they go, woo! You know, hard to follow, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've not seen that trailer yet, so.
Mm. Oh, well. Yeah, I think it remains to be seen what they're going to do with it, but I'm not getting much hints of the sparks of creativity and energy. Mm.
At least it's back in the Shonen Jump app now, so.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's always the comic. Like, the comic is fucking gorgeous, so. Yes. And, I mean, like, just the regular one,
and also
besides the improved
huge.
One, is funny as shit.
Mm. Like, new chapter on Monday. That as well. 72 pages. That's
fucking nice. So you still have that. And it's not like we don't have Mob Psycho happening currently. So even if it comes out and it's disappointing, I'm still going to be happy enough. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's more than enough stuff to watch next season. Even accounting for things
exactly.
which might be a disappointment or things we can't watch due to being locked down in Netflix or because...
Oh, yeah, of course.
The character they're based on is an anarchist who's...
sticking it to the man.
Sticking it to the man. Continuing to post videos even though there's a court order against them.
We will get like a class new Giant Product intro out of it at the very least. So
yes, yeah.
There's that to look forward to.
Next up is Rinchi Okoda-chan, episode 10. And this is Hiroshi Nagahama as the director and Ai Kobayashi as the actor and puppets by Yuriko Sasaoka.
Sasaoka, yes, that's her.
Modern artist. I didn't realize who it was. But like part of the way in, I was like, I knew there was a Nagahama episode. Well, this watching it made me go, oh, there was a Nagahama episode coming up. And I was like, I bet this is the Nagahama episode. Mm-hmm. And then I saw, yes, it is the Nagahama episode. And then I was like, well, I think I now know why I don't like Hiroshi Nagahama.
What, because he fucking hires other people to do the job for him?
No, because he gets an idea and he just persists with that single idea for too long.
Well, his idea was to do it like Thunderbirds, and this the woman who came in and did the fucking job for him was like, well, I can do puppets, but it's going to be nothing like Thunderbirds.
It's going to be like this. It's going to be kind of weird, like, heads with little legs in them. We're going to superimpose faces onto them and weirdly animate them with crazy eyes and mouths.
You know, it reminded me, what the fuck was that thing? And this is the only way I can describe it, and I forgot to look it up. It was like a Nickelodeon cartoon that was put on before the original. That's it! I was going to say before the Digimon movie, it looks like fucking Angela Anaconda, and it was really bugging me. I was just like, is this like that? But no, they were going through something completely different.
So yes, it's basically Okoda and supporting characters singing about all the personality traits that Okoda has.
That she embodies of all women, and that why she... has relevance like that, I guess.
She's a Japanese Marilyn Monroe. She's like a modern day samurai general. The usual compliments you pay to somebody like that.
But yeah, I did feel to me it was the experience of watching, what was his superhero thing called again?
Nagahama?
Yeah.
Oh, the reflection.
The reflection again, where it was like, I was on board to begin with. But by the end, I was like, okay, right. I was exhausted.
Wasn't that bad. I was eager then to delve into interview and watch it end to end to find out why did you want to do it like this again? It's quite a departure from previous entries in the series.
Like, it makes sense when it was like, oh, and basically this was done by modern artists. And I was like, I've seen way worse modern art than this. This is probably why it was so forgiving.
Oh, God, yeah. I think it wasn't about the actual kind of craft and something involved. Even if it probably did it. No,
I really appreciated the crafty bit at the end where it shows like the how she set up the shots and everything like that. That was really interesting.
But it's only 3 minutes, but it seems that the guy's done in like a fairly, in very short order.
Yeah.
Because she was kind of surprised as well, as you know, even for something as small as this, the artist was, Sasaoko, that even for something that's kind of short running, I mean, there was like a lot of people at work on it and trying to do different kind of jobs, which she hadn't really encountered that much when she's making her own films or her own artwork installations. So
the director have to convince her. It's like, okay, now don't do everything yourself, because we've got all these other people hired, so we need to give them something. But she was at least happy not to do the voice acting, because apparently she can't sing.
It did make me wonder whether he met somebody who knew about who did rotoscoping, and that's why Flowers of the Evil looked like it did as well. Is like
right,
like he meets somebody and gets obsessed with a thing, and then that thing overtakes the entire project.
I mean, that just makes it sound like, again, and this one fucking it seems to be evidence towards it, is like he just meets someone who's like, this person could do my job for me, and then I'd have to do nothing and take all the credit.
But then what if someone takes your job?
Well, no, it'll still say directed by him on it, like it does in this fucking episode. And I was like, despite the fact that even in the interview bit, it's like, yeah, she did pretty much all of it.
So coasting along that moose-y money. Just give me a new one of those.
Right, anything else to add before we move on?
Well, next week, the interview is going to take place at the pub.
Of course.
That's the laziest interview I've ever fucking heard. Brilliant.
Osamu Kobayashi. I'm sure probably the episode takes place in a pub as well, or at the very least some sort of dive bar / gig venue.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't even fucking make an animation. They just go to the pub for the episode.
Well, they say it's going to be a special appearance by a musical artist, so I'm assuming it may be a music video, as you suspected.
Yeah. Yep. That is my suspicion. I can find out when we finished, because it's already up.
Yes.
Next up, it is Karakuri Circus, episode 21, Silver Goddess. Let me refer to my notes.
How many volumes have we skipped? 17?
No more skipping. 63. This is material from 3 different volumes, arranged in a different order, with some scenes barely resembling what's in the comic.
Of course, there.
Spare parts.
Because we skipped the entire arc that I mentioned previously.
I just got to say now, Niall, you joke about that, but there's a puppet made out of spare parts in this episode. And I feel like it was this, is this, I don't even know at this stage, is that literally an amalgamation character?
In the comic there was an arc where he basically went off, and this was before Eleonore found him again, and he was turned into a bit of a harem. Which gave Faceless time, presumably, to prepare the plot, which he does straight away in the anime.
To make a blimp and an army of puppets. Yeah. Yes.
And also, more importantly, giant silver puppets which are spreading Xenopha all over the globe.
They are at every capital city, just hovering there as a silver goddess. Ah, you dipshit, it's made out of nanites, everyone's gonna die.
Also, apparently, the guy, the Beastmaster puppet, has just given one of the Chimera to the Beast Tamer from the circus.
Has he?
Aren't they riding around on it?
They're riding around on the jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, okay, are they? Okay, I misremembered.
It's easy in this fucking show, man.
He's tamed most of his animals that make up his creature, so it'll probably be fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, the last episode, he did literally walk up to her with his two fucking chimera things. It's like, yes, they were bred from a lion called Beast. And she's like, a lion called Beast? I knew a lion called Beast. And I was like, why did you just walk up to this random woman, say this, and leave? Other than to get the plot along, obviously.
Yeah. Who's the... I need all these new puppets' names. Let me find the anime.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's so many. I think the guy who's like a creepy, sexless clown is like called Harlequin or something.
Yes.
We already got an Harlequin. We can't even do him.
No, this is Harlequin, not an
Harlequin. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's more on the nose. I've forgotten what the other little girl puppet that's berating the older little girl puppet. God, I sound like a crazy person.
Well, yeah, and also because it's creepy that he's turned somebody who used to be an adult woman puppet into a little girl puppet.
Yeah, he seems to have a thing for making little girl puppets, which is just super weird, but I mean, like, it just fits into his whole I'm a super creepo thing.
Also, in the comic, you'd have got a lot more with the little girl version of Columbine that we introduced in this episode. She's already introduced in the comic, like, volumes beforehand.
Oh, but we didn't know it was the same puppet, was it?
Possibly not. I don't know. Okay. That hasn't been translated yet.
Yeah.
But it basically kind of sets up like a similar, again, because it's all a mirror of the relationship of Shoji and Angelina and the doll Francine.
I thought it was pretty cool to bring back the guys. It's like, hey, they're like, hey, thanks for like repairing us after we fucking died in Egypt.
That's the best bit of the entire episode. Yeah.
And then he's like, but I mean, like, we were kind of wondering, like, why did you repair us? And he's like, because it's funny, because you suck, because you all got your asses kicked. It's really funny to me. All my other puppets are going to laugh and point at you now.
Yeah.
We're going to have a big party where we do that.
Yeah, the three just got broken and didn't melt because they turned their back on Francine. Yeah, he's rebuilt them all basically just to take the piss out of them and to obviously set
what
up
What a villainous man he is.
Yes. I mean, also a foolish villainous man, because clearly this is going to go bad
for him. Don't make some super puppets that you're specifically bringing back to take the piss out of them. I know you have super puppets, but they're built to kill.
Also,
idiot.
Ones who are loyal to Francine.
Not you.
And, okay, you've brought on somebody on board your airship now who looks exactly like their master.
He's not only brought on someone who looks exactly like Francine. He's like, here, go bring her dinner.
Yes.
He's given them the instruction of going meeting that person who you would probably totally be programmed to obey. What are you like?
Well,
it's all part of his evil plan where he's totally going to win, I guess.
Yeah, and also because I like the fact that he just did it for a laugh. Because then it becomes like the evil version of Narumi at the start of the series.
It would make more sense if there was that gap of time as well. Because they're like, dude, you had to make a whole blimp and puppet army here. Why did you bring him back? And it's like, thought it'd be funny. It's like, it makes more sense if he has more time to do all this in that he did that. But yeah, it's a nice villainous turn.
Okay, here we go. Add five new kids. So yeah, we got Harlequin. Yeah, he's the guy with the tiny little bowler hat with the flower on top of his head that appears to be completely naked with no genitals. Dia Montina is the gothic Lolita. Capitan Graziano. I don't think he does anything in this episode.
Yeah, there's some cool looking pirate guys in the background.
Yeah, Brickella.
We don't know what their deal is.
They're just in the back. Oh, Cupidia, that's the one who attacks.
Yeah, he shows up and dies in this episode, so great.
Yeah.
I know by now.
He's like, hello, guy, I've always had a thing for you. I want to sex you up. And guy's like, not into puppets, and I like ladies, thanks. And he's like, I think you have the most perfect, beautiful face. If we could be together, I could turn you into a puppet, and you would never get wrinkles, because wrinkles are gross. And Rumi shows up, punches him through the chest, and guy remarks, is like, now your face is all wrinkly because you're fucking dead, as they fly away.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck was the point of this scene?
Show you how much of a dope that guy was and how much
So yeah, Guy's now teamed up with all the survivors from the circus attack, which is Mingxia, Georges, and Narumi. And
they have the most tenuous fucking reason as to why they're not getting affected by Xanatha like everyone else.
Oh,
apparently
the circus
on planet
people,
Earth.
Yes. Yeah, that's...
It's like, well, you hang around with Shurigana, so you must have become immune to it just because you were standing near her for any length of time.
Or she didn't properly wash up one day and you got some of her saliva.
That's so gross.
Drank from the same water bottle.
Yeah.
Oh, second like an indirect kiss. Too. They all got indirect kisses. that doesn't make any goddamn sense. It's bodily fluids how this thing works. Unpleasant.
So they've got some information from LeFou about a machine called Harry, which cures Xanatha syndrome. And I forgot about it.
It was called Harry. Yeah.
Does that stand for anything?
No, that's his name. I mean, it's probably a puppet. To be fair, probably a machine that's literally hello. It's like hello, I'm Harry, the computer.
And it was at the treatment center all along.
So they need to fly all the way back to the treatment center for the one thing that can cure. Yeah. Narumi's really pissed about it too. He's like, what the fuck? We got to go all the way back there? Come on, fly me back in your puppet.
Did he just make it in the meantime? Or what is this? Oh, this was just a thing.
I don't know. I've lost track of time in this thing.
Meantime, wasn't there well before.
Somebody disappeared there for a minute because I heard a Skype beep.
Yeah, me too.
Probably me. Yes.
Okay. It's not clear if it was there the whole time or what.
And of course, when they get there, they run into the one kid who had a name, whose name I've forgotten.
Oh my god, I've forgotten him instantly. And I was like, oh, this kid's going to get kidnapped. And he fucking does, like, nearly instantly.
Yeah, and of course, loads of puppets.
Yeah, obviously. What's the puppet, the gambler puppet? Is he just called Jack the Gambler or something like that?
I think so.
He's got a very basic ass name. It's like Jimmy the Gambler or something. I don't know.
Feels very much like I really enjoyed the Darby the Gambler part.
It's not like when you walk into a room full of corpses of puppets and corpses of humans and he's like, check it out, I'm made of corpses of puppets and humans, but I'm all about gambling and fair play. That's why I'm kidnapping this child and holding him to gunpoint so you'll fucking gamble with me.
Yeah, this is Ming Jia who's got to gamble with him. I can't remember what the other guys are up to at this point. Probably beating up all the puppets. There's an entire character missing from the comic in this part.
That was it. The two guys are guarding the facility. I thought your man was a Shirogane, so surely he's a baddie then, no? The guy with the dress.
No, he's the one around. He didn't go into the... Because, again, this is information missed out.
Yeah, okay, I figured I was missing someone. Because I was surely he'd be on Faceless's side, if anything,
No. Well, weirdly, they've left out all the other Shiriganos who are on Faceless's side, perhaps because they realised they didn't make... They realised people would have the same questions you did.
Okay, fair enough. Jesus.
Oh, yeah, because the guy from the Kuriga Village with his killer puppets there as well. I forgot all about him.
Yeah, he has a big puppet, and he says, I'm going to defend this place and fight off the puppets, but clearly puppets have already gotten in.
The Weasley guy from the start of this series?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, he's still around. He hasn't done anything, but he's still around. He says he's going to get paid €1 billion, and he's really happy about that, but he hasn't fucking done anything.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, it's moving so quickly towards the end now. I was like, surely it's not going to be 36 episodes. But at the same time, I was looking at, like, where we are. If it went to 26, it's going to be way into next season to get to 26. But if it
goes...
You say
that, but it's going to skip, like, 16 volumes. It'll be fine.
There isn't 16 volumes left to skip. That's the thing.
It'll find a way.
Let me do the math. I think there's 7.5 volumes left.
Okay, so if we skip 4, we'll be able to get it. We'll be able to get the next 3 episodes.
There's nothing they can skip.
3 volumes in 3 episodes.
Bits will be shorter because.
Yeah.
But yeah, for scheduling though, because if it goes to 36, then it ends neatly at the end of next season. So it will be 36, I think, despite the weird pacing it's doing now. When it could be slowing down, it seems to be speeding up. So I don't know whether he's like written a new ending.
If he's written a new ending, that'd make sense. If they're actually going to spend time on the fights and have them be fucking cool again, that would make sense. The pacing of the fights,
Everyone's going to have flashbacks to the scenes they missed out.
Oh, God, yeah. So, like, the lion tamer woman, she keeps flashing back to shit we haven't fucking seen.
Yes.
Like, what am I supposed to fucking take from this? Is eventually it going to show me the flashback that I missed while they were at the circus?
I think so, yes. I have a feeling it's going to do that.
It's like, you can't get mad at us for not showing you things, because we do it eventually.
Yes.
It's not in the order you would like.
I did make reference to a thing which has not happened. It's like, fuck you, show, fuck you.
It's like Memento by Christopher Nolan.
If they left out part of the scenes. Oh, God.
But the stuff with the three original puppets, I really liked this episode.
That was good. Yeah. The thing is, like you say, it's a better show now, technically, but still incredibly frustrating.
Oh yeah.
I'm fascinated to watch the fucking train wreck of it, but, more so than the quality of it at this stage though.
Next up is Bono Bono episode. Where are we now?
50.
It's not on the... Oh, here it is. Slid over there. Bono Bono, third season, episode 50, Wolverine Stood Up.
My God.
Have you heard? Wolverine Stood Up.
And he has it. In the past as well. We just never really knew about it.
It's just when you're not paying attention. I did like that. It's like he was standing up earlier in that scene where he was picking flowers.
So they're like, well, if you can stand up, then why is he walking all fours? It's because it's easier to poop.
Oh, checks out, I guess.
I,
don't know. It's like you should really be more of a squat, really, to get the optimum, like, shitting stance going. But
one of my father's favorite jokes was, "You'd be a horse of a man if you could shit walk." And it's not so much a joke as saying the most vulgar thing you can think of over and over again for years, which is, yeah, a dad joke. So yeah, I that's maybe why I'm thinking it's easier on all fours.
So Wolverine's determined, Raccoon's determined to show the other two that Wolverine can stand up. And they're like wondering what he's going to look like when he stands up. Is he going to have like really long legs and become super attractive?
Or did he just like have an awkward like sort of hunched over pose so he doesn't do it that often?
We'll go over his dad and ask him where he's gone to. What are you doing, Mr. Wolverine, sir? I'm training to fight a giant worm. It's a guy's massive like the tubing there. But sir,
there's no such thing as giant worms.
Worms are growing up big. I'm preparing for the 1 in a million chance when I may have to fight one. May not be today, may not be tomorrow, but it could be someday.
Yes, not only that, the 1 in a million chance that when I get home, there's a 1 in a million worm hiding inside my tree, waiting to attack me.
Listen, if there's a 1% chance, I can't take the chance. If what was that stupid fucking line from Batman versus Superman? If there's like a 1% chance, then I have to take it as an absolute certainty. That kind of, something stupid like that. Yeah, he's just preparing for every possible eventuality.
Yeah.
Which it is shown to be the right thing to do somehow.
God.
Oh,
libertarians, man. Stop talk was right twice a day, didn't it?
So they chase after him. He runs away. Like, why are you running away? It's because you're chasing me. I'm only chasing you because you're running away from us.
Like if Raccoon comes here, it's like, hey, Wolverine. It's like, oh, fuck, it's Raccoon. He's come to bully me. Like he's taking the...
Yeah.
He's assumed, but like, you know, he's inferring.
Yeah, so after they point out, oh, they just saw him stand up when he was picking flowers, he reveals that he has a second mysterious way of standing up. But he can't remember, because it only ever happened once when a mountain fell down in front of him.
So they're trying to, like, shock him into stuff, and Bono has an amazing fucking plan. To like, you know, they kind of like the jump out at you and scare you out of getting the hiccups kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he can't do it because of his whole personality kind of thing.
It's okay. We'll go to the mountain and we'll try and trigger a lance out or something like that. And even on the way there, if it happens in great, even if it happens accidentally, like when Chipmunk falls over and they're just like, is he going to do it?
I like Chipmunk's, what would you call it? Like, charade. I'm going to pretend to be a mountain falling down and see if this works.
That's also actually quite a nice bit of an animation.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good. They try to make the mountain fall down, but a very surprising thing does happen, obviously.
Yes, his father emerges out of the ground being attacked by a giant worm.
And, like, is fighting a giant worm while falling down a mountainside. That's
like, I told you, I knew this day would come. And presumably he wins, because we don't see anymore. I hope he wins anyway.
If he shows up again in the episode, we'll know that the worm didn't get him this time.
Yeah. And so the standing involves, he stands on his tail with both arms up, but then he goes, that's not the mysterious way I do. That's another way. But I have remembered what the mysterious way is, now that's happened to me. And he appears to do exactly the same thing. And they go, that's exactly the same thing. And Wonder Off goes, no, my hand's doing this now.
No, check out the point. Completely different dance. God, fucking good damn show.
This one was good. Because it was just wall-to-wall jokes and stupidity. Mm.
Yeah.
Then there's fun kids, like, engaging in peer pressure upon one of their friends. Like, it's like, come on, Wolverine, do the thing. Like, I don't wanna. Do the thing.
So there's a load of great character interaction, a load of great fucking jokes, and just this one's like sometimes it feels like they're kind of trying to space out the jokes. This one's fucking chock full of them.
Yeah. It also feels like you get a bit of an idea of like how Wolverine's like his dad, like having him away from his dad for a bit, but his dad also in the same episode doing wacky stuff.
Yeah, as a way of comparing, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Next story is We're Creeping Around.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds good.
Then we've got Boogie Pop and Others, episode 16, Overdrive, The King of Distortion 3.
At least I assume that was the name. The name was untitled on Crunchyroll.
Well, yeah. But
I'm just counting now, yeah.
Going in parts, yes. You get more of that, certainly.
Well, it could have been, what was that giant monster's name?
Zoo.
Yeah, I was just about to look it up because that is the key to the episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, the episode could have been called Zugari's Revenge or whatever the hell it's called.
Yes.
Strikes Back.
Zurigai, I don't know.
Zuragi.
Oh, that was close. Okay.
The dinosaur made of other dinosaurs.
That's yes. It's like you got a bunch of toy dinosaurs and just mashed them into a bunch of Play-Doh, which I'm guessing is what inspired the child.
Exactly. To come up with.
And it looks fucking great. It's a, I mean, like, not only because the animation's class in it, but because it's just a weird ass looking thing to look right at with your eyeballs.
Also, Makoto's dad.
Yeah.
Mm.
Or, yeah, the dad that comes to him in his dreams. Or his dream version. Or we kind of learn it's like it's the King of Distortion is the you keep hidden in your heart.
It's your alter ego is the way it's presented.
Yeah.
Because we're talking, like, basically, we have a conversation between, what's the class rep's name again? The truant officer. I can't think of her name now. But yeah, it basically cuts the conversation between her and her friend talking about, cause she wants to know about Boogie Pop. It's like, is it possible that, like, there is, like, two personalities, and friends like, nah, there's no provable thing for multiple personality syndrome. It's thought that it's the person lying, possibly lying to themselves as well, but that it's an inherent part of themselves that they're just denying is part of themselves.
Yeah, which I thought was a bit callous, but I remember we were talking to her one who's big into criminal psychology, so she may have a more kind of objective sort of scientific stance in the whole matter.
Or that she's reading, like, from criminal psychologists, people who assume it's like, nah, this guy is totally guilty, that kind of way. There might be some bias in her thinking, but obviously it informs her friend's thinking that of what the King of Distortion exactly is, which is, like you say, like the part of your heart you keep hidden, your alter ego or your secondary personality, that kind of way. The you that would have been were you not in the way, I guess.
Yeah. But it speaks as well, like, you know, like, you fall in a certain sort of modes depending on who you were with. Like, the way you act around your family, for instance, is a lot different the way how you act around your friends. And that can
different again when you're at work, different again when you're at an interview, the faces you put on. Yeah,
and that can get, you know, over time, depending on what stresses or strains are weighing on you, depending on those, like, questions or things, the way you did it, it can become further and further fragmented, such that it can become almost, yes, another personality or another fucking entirely different mindset you can kind of hold in your head at the same time as other ones.
Yeah. But, like, it's weird because the King of Distortion appears to be, like, a similar thing for everyone, so it makes me think there's another fucking level to this, or something like that.
Because Boogie Pop's not entirely sure what is, whether the King of Distortion is the threat or not.
Yeah.
Also, clearly, the King of Distortion is also afraid of Zuragi. Whatever was planned here wasn't expecting for a kaiju to manifest itself.
Yeah, it was expecting to see, it's like, their former friend who died as a child, the guy at school who they maybe liked, but maybe was also disturbed by and affected their life profoundly. Like, their missing father. Wait, their missing father's a giant dinosaur? Ah, shit.
It didn't count on a child wanting to grow up to be a giant monster, giant dinosaur, did you? But that's really a first mistake, allowing a fucking 7-year-old child to come inside here.
Yes. Also, the child of the woman who was in love with the person who is possibly responsible for creating the King of Distortion in the first place.
Phew. Yes. I guess the King of Distortion didn't make this plan is one of the things. For one, your man did make the plan, so yeah, couldn't have accounted for those things.
That feels like, it feels like the threat is like a post-humus threat.
As in, like you said, even the King of Distortion's like, oh shit, I didn't plan on one of me being a fucking dinosaur. That's gonna draw a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And is this having a tangible effect out in the physical world as well?
Yes.
Like, there was, like, strange craters and fucking the earth is being kind of shattered, like some kind of earthquake going on.
They think it's a localized earthquake and they're worried the building is going to come down. Yeah.
It could be just cause of like, this Duragi in the dream manifesting itself in some way, shape, or form in reality or in the waking world. It's
yeah.
Which, again, definitely makes me think that the original author had, like, looked into that research I mentioned way back at the start of, like, how... of succubuses and UFOs being like greys visiting you and sleep paralysis being influenced by earthquakes and electromagnetic waves. It seems the idea is like it's going the opposite way this time. It's like the electromagnetic waves in people's dreams are causing earthquakes. But also like the geometry of the building, I'm guessing, is what is the cause of the problem.
I'm guessing it's like, because they talk about the fact that it does have the continuous, not staircase, but continuous floor or whatever, that it's like, I'm going to put it like literally, and it's probably like a little less fucking blunt than this, but it's like a drill into subconscious, because it's obviously trying to release that part of you that you keep like locked away, that kind of thing. So, and then the fact that it's a drill into unconscious that actually pulls that unconscious into reality. Because he does mention again the fucking turn you into gold. Like the King of Distortion seems to want to do something for you, not become the dominant personality. It's like, yeah, but you got these issues that I'm going to try and help you work through.
And outside, they're discovering like loads of the files have been deleted about the building.
Yeah, it's like, well, we looked up the planning permission and the fucking the layout and everything, but it's like he just destroyed all the files, so we don't know how to open it up again. And you opened the doors in the first place. What the hell, guys?
Well, unless it was timed deletions and stuff, so they might have existed right up until the moment the place opened.
I get you. That does make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Also, there's the question of like, oh, was the bit when he woke up previously, the guy woke up previously, was he still in a dream? Because then...
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that was happening when we had the first little bit with the classroom book up. That was when, I was earlier, would say, earlier in the incident when he was still trying to get out of that dream.
Yeah.
They discovered the hatch then that she was in, open it, and then, go look downside that then.
Yeah, and Boogie Pop can't initially see the things. It takes them a while to tune in.
I think they, let's go with they. They have to, like, attune themselves to the way the kid thinks. Or something like that. Or the kid has to believe in Boogie Pop or something like that. It's kind of a weird sort of a limitation. So Boogie Pop can only interfere with the kids in school because there's all kinds of rumors going around with her, that kind of way.
Yeah,
it has to be.
I did like her thing as well of like, I've never fought a monster before.
Like, it has to be taught summoned, can't just, because.
Like, they have to be summoned by people believing in the legend of Boogie Pop. People have, even if they're wrong, it's like, oh, Boogie Pop takes away beautiful young women in their prime. It's like, as long as you believe in her, it's fine. It's still applicable.
Yeah, I just find it interesting that Boogie Pop has no, like, actual influence over that. They just think, oh, they appear because of it. No, but I just kind of mind my own business, and sometimes I get fucking yanked across space and time to inhabit someone's body and try.
And then I have to figure out why the fuck I'm here, like, what exactly thing I'm here to stop. So it's as confusing for me, but, you know, it's a living.
It's kind of like fucking, never mind.
Lots of smug smiles, both from Boogie Pop and the King of Distortion throughout the episode. They both have, which is another sign of like, oh, they're similar entities, because...
Yeah. The idea that they're both like secondary personalities for one,
Yeah. So aware of now, if you find Suima, like, you know, sometimes you can't just explain away, like, in fucking personalities to some kind of criminal defense. Sometimes a cosmic entity would have possessed your friend to come here and...
That's never going to hold up in a court.
Well.
It was a cosmic entity, Your Honor.
Yeah. But like, a nice little interactions there was up at the class rep and saying, oh, like, I'm kind of inhabiting this host while I'm here. And sometimes I get a little, like, jealous because, you know, she's this guy living her, like, nice little life with her boyfriend and having a nice time. And sometimes I know that he's asking to meet me, and you know, so I'm kind of, oh, maybe I could come out and just talk to him instead. Maybe I could just do that instead of whatever the fuck this is.
Yeah, that boring first episode was actually a fucking relief for Boogie Pop, where it's like, oh, I just get to hang around and have conversations with some guy. That's awesome. This is unusual for me. But also, her jealousy comes out where the class rep is all like, is hungry. And it's like, here, eat their lunch that she was going to have with her boyfriend. Like, then she wants it. It's like, ah, fuck her. You know, she'll make it.
I like when they defeat the dinosaur and sends it off and it's become like a stegosaurus type shape.
Yeah, it just sort of flips on itself to another parts of dinosaur that functions as enough of a dinosaur.
Mm.
It doesn't, like, Boogie Pop apologize, going, it's like, oh, don't worry, someone will believe in you someday.
Yes.
A terrifying kind of gelatinous snake neck with a T-Rex head on the end.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
We've all had that dream, yeah.
but the cliffhanger is apparently the dinosaur was so powerful that it somehow damaged the building in the real world. And so,
well, it did knock over the building in the dream world, so yes. Yeah.
But the building is not going to last much longer. So, big,
so presumably we got to wake people up before this tenuous link
and also unlock the doors. Collapses.
Yeah.
Well,
it'll
be grand. If just open the door, they'll just all slide out right out. Just one like, big long flat door. It's like, just push them all out.
Like a big slide.
Super fun, happy slide.
Yeah, I like when Boogie Pop's asking the kid, have you had any experience? He's like, of what? Bungee jumping as they're mid-flight.
Fucking sweet move is wrapping that wire around the fucking dinosaur head and then slicing it off.
Yeah, because like Boogie Pop looking is like eventually when they can see the dinosaur, Boogie Pop is kind of like, I just got wires. That's a big dinosaur. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do to that. But then kind of putting it together over the course of the fight, I suppose.
Yeah, with
enough wires, you can do anything. You just need a big enough wire.
Yep. It's the animation for all the stuff with the dinosaur is some of the best stuff from the series.
Well, yeah, even some of the faces, I was like, oh, I think it's better animation today.
Yeah, and I always like when you like get the glimpse of her normal clothes underneath the Boogie Pop costume.
Yeah, it really kind of weirdly normalizes the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, they're really out there in this episode.
So yes.
Yeah.
The guy going, is that what she's going to wear to the date? I don't know.
It seems about right for her personality.
What? Sensible jumper. Nothing wrong with that.
And also the discussion of like, whether it is like just another identity of like, I'm not sure, is like, obviously I've posited the idea that it's somehow Scarecrow, but I also wonder if it's like, her second personality has taken on the inspiration of Scarecrow.
In the same way that the King of Distortion has taken on inspiration from these other people. Yes. Yeah. I don't think it's like directly copy of him. I would say like maybe part of him, but like I feel like it's a new thing considering that it's doing very different things. Yeah.
It's all about, well, this inherited will. It's like, no, like there's like figuratively inheriting will. I mean, it might have like literally inherited some of that will as well.
And there's also drinking the dissolved remains of an alchemist.
More than one way to transport your soul onto another being.
Or you can make a puppet out of their hair. Lots of fucking things you can do. Lots of options.
Next up is Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, Episode 7.
It is. How exciting! The Great Rocket Repair Operation, wherein they repaired the rocket. So the girls are going to fix this rocket. It's been busted since the start of the series. We've got to fix the scene to get back up into space and kick some space pirate arse. So we're going to do that. The computer knows what to do, so it'll assign us jobs and how to do it. So Lala, you're the alien, you know how this thing works. You'll be doing kind of the intricate kind of work and stuff. Malika, you're like the well-to-do, being group of leadership time, so you're going to be kind of the project manager in the whole thing. Elena, you're athletic type, you can just carry stuff around. And Hikaru, You are a hyperactive spaz. You just better sweep the floor and don't break anything. You got it, chief! It's like, I feel like a little bit hard done by. I can do a lot more, but I'll do whatever you tell me to do at most. So they go on doing that. They're hauling steel girders and putting them over, fixing things up and bolting things on, but it's like, oh man. Wheel work is boring. It's just some kind of a chore. And the car can't sweep anymore. So she's just like doodling away in the notebook. And it's like, what you got there? It's like, I got some ideas for a new design for the ship. And it's like, oh, cool. You got all blinged out here. You got stars and bows and stuff all festooned over the thing. And then we go inside. Oh, yeah, we kind of like compartmentalized thing. We kind of like put separate rooms because there's going to be a lot of space for us. You have our own little cabins for ourselves. We can decorate like in our own way. A computer was going, this is highly irregular. Extra work being done. It will affect efficiency, but they seem to love it. Maybe I can love too. So, you know, it's a job is easier to do once you have invested in yourself in it. You know, once you have like a reason and motivation to get it done, when you can't think of an end result, then it doesn't seem such a hard work after all. And then the Tinker Day comes along and is like, ah, oh, what are you doing over there? Fixing a rocket? Let's go break their shit. And then it's like, no way, dude. We fix this rocket ourselves. We put all of our decorations and all of our fucking hard work into it. You're not going to bust it up now. It means too much to us. And they fight her off because, damn it, they're using teamwork somehow to defend themselves. We're fucking retreat for now. So finally, to just say, we're going to take off tomorrow morning. Don't tell your parents or nothing. Or they don't seem to anyway. Like, no need to write any letters or say you're going to the spelling bee in Canada to explain why you might be in space for a long time. Mom's come here Sunday morning, we'll go to space, fight some space pirates. Look, they go, and they go to a warp tunnel from regular space into pretty cool star glittery space. It's all like rainbows and sparkles. And then they're going to land on the dog planet next week. So I'm looking forward to seeing some weird aliens. It'd be some kind of magical girl version of Space Dandy, I hope. Yeah, it's fun. I feel like all the Earth stuff, it's probably got as far as it could get, but they're obviously trying to get these kids into space as fast as we can. Get a team together, go, and then out in there seeing crazy-ass planets, which I think is a good direction to go. I'm not sure if they've done anything similar in previous particular series. Probably at that, but maybe not so much in the scale. It could be like hopping from planet to planet and becoming a new kind of gimmick and thing every week to keep it going, besides all the usual gimmicks. So, yeah, it's just going to be like hitting much larger strides in the episodes to come. And I'm along for the ride. It's fun. Fun on the bun on a Sunday.
Also on Sunday, I think like an hour beforehand, I watched... what they translated it as on the fan subs. Dino Knight Sentai Real Solga Episode 1. K-Boom Rio Solga. So there's a new Sentai series. It's dinosaur and knight themed.
Ooh.
Is that the new Sentai thing? It has to be like two things.
Yeah, probably.
Because we've already done everything. So now we just do everything in combination. And then I guess it'll be a combination of three next time.
Yeah, so it's about these dinosaur knights who live in a hidden village inside a Japanese forest. But one of the squires of the knights is interested in the real world and gets at the start, like, pops out of it to see what this YouTuber is up to as she's wandering around this forest that she's supposed to keep out of. But she's pretending it's the Amazon jungle, which I believe is like a meta commentary on the fact that there's less and less places will let them film tokusatsu stuff.
Right.
Cause she's pretending it's the Amazon, and like her granddad? Anyway, some elder relation is, back at home, and they're a paleontologist, so I'm sure that will play into discovering father, apparently, new power-ups later on along. But oh no, the Druidon tribe have returned, who are apparently evil rivals, who are, the Rio Sol tribe are the good guys and the Druidons are the bad guys, and they're all people in costumes. thankfully, not real humans. And they're pretty good costumes. I'll have to check who designed these costumes.
I was trying to think what the opposite of dinosaur knights would be. What is it like creationist?
They're also knights.
Damn it. Okay.
Creationists, I don't know. Gunmen.
Because the creationists would still use dinosaurs. It's just that, you know, it's God put them there. That's the difference.
To test our faith.
Exactly. That's why they want to fight them.
The ones in this, we meet Curion, who is like a mushroom squire. And
like he's a mushroom man, or
he's dressed a bit like a traditional knight squire. He's got pantaloons and things on. And Tank Joe, who is like a castle
submarine
with a big cannon sticking out of his chest.
Nice.
And apparently, they turn humans into minosaur monsters.
Minosaur, like a minor dinosaur.
Yeah.
Or a minotaur dinosaur.
Anyway, weirdly, at the start of the series, we've got two reds, two blues, and two pinks.
Like two different shades of red, like one's maroon and
exactly the same shape of reds, because it's like there's three knights and they're three squires.
That's really confusing.
Well, okay. That's fine. By the end of the episode, there's only one of each color.
Oh, they die.
They all die. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
It's the rare triple Roy fucker. In which all the inspiring adult characters get killed in the first episode.
Brilliant.
Also, their temple gets destroyed and they have to go to the human realm, where presumably they'll meet up with the YouTuber.
Be in a contemporary setting.
Yes. Who he was told, our hero Ko was told to wipe her memory, but he never got round to it. So she knows about the Ryoso tribe, and so no doubt they'll meet up with her, because she's clearly a regular member of the cast, and she'll never get to become a knight, I guess, because she's too much clearly the comic relief ally. Having said that, the opening credits has her father ominously fading away in the starting credits.
Oh no.
And is being directed by a guy who did loads of episodes of Kamen Rider Build, so no matter how jolly and humorous it may seem, the fact that it had three characters killed off in the first episode.
Yeah, and like they were the parental figures. It's like, yeah, you're not in with a good shot then, old scientist guy.
I found it quite enjoyable. It wasn't as fun as The Last Dinosaur Show, which I think is my favourite Sentai ever.
Demmer the Last Dinosaur?
Yeah, that's the one. But I wasn't that much a fan of the Lupin one, annoyingly. I thought that would be exactly my sort of thing. I did like the space one before that, though. That was a lot of fun. Whether I'll stick with it, I don't know. I might possibly do, because I'm only like checking in with Zio here and there. I probably will give Zio a proper look this week, just because it's back on Decade stuff, which is a weird thing. In that this 20th anniversary show relies fairly heavily on the 10th anniversary show of the Heisei Kamen Riders. Yeah, because in the last episode they discovered the main character and another character were the only two survivors on this bus crash when they were children. But another character looked up who was on that bus, and they weirdly saw that, hang on, what's the guy who is Kamen Rider Decade was also on the bus? What's going on?
So, yeah, it's probably just the thing of just we're old now, dude, and it's like, well, it has been like 10 years, an entire generation is that kind of thing. It's like PlayStation is retro now? What the hell?
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, if you're a kid, what you're getting out of this, it feels like they wedged it in for all the adults. Or specifically the
who are still watching.
Who are still watching.
It's like putting in like a song by the band Joe Dissy or Joe Dixie, however you say that.
That is true,
at the end of your new TV anime.
I think people are hoping that it will finally explain the villain from Decade, who has never been properly explained.
He only appears once every decade.
When he appears constantly, he's constantly warning that Decade is going to destroy whatever world they're in. I don't think he's ever had an origin story. Weirdly, okay. There's a character that shows up in Kitaro this week who looks very much like him.
Wait, is that not the guy who's like Kang the Conqueror? He was trying to stop himself.
Well, I suspect that might be where they're going.
Oh, okay.
I suspect that might be the opportunity to do that story where it turns out the villain was Decade all along.
Mm. My God.
Anyway, talking to Kitaro. Gigi no Kitaro, episode 47, The Baby Stealing Ubume. The title is a red herring. I mean, it does feature in it, but that's not really what the episode's about.
Well, the fact that it's resolved in like the first 5 minutes is kind of like a dead giveaway.
Mm-hmm. And you got fucking Nanashi prowling around going, "Ooh, not long now." Ooh. So you're thinking, okay, what's he up to?
It's probably fine. There's a new app out. Everyone fucking loves yokai now. It's all looking up for yokai. They're on YouTube and everything. What could go wrong with a YouTuber doing it? Yeah.
Like, well, episode one?
It's the same YouTuber.
Fucking guy is still around.
You can't fucking mess with the algorithm, man. He just gets them clicks.
He's looking up fucking Prince Philip videos and this fucker's in the sidebar and saying, "Yokai, coming in, stealing our jobs." A 3-hour video debate about the subject. Oh, go on. But there's some thing is seen in babies. It's a boomer, and so they lay a sting operation. They're gonna put old man crybaby in his crib. Even though I'm not gonna shave the mustache off, they're just gonna leave him there to do his thing, crybaby, around. And when this ubume comes by to nab this baby, we're gonna tail it back to the hideout and get the rest of them.
Yeah, I did like that. That's where we start with the thing, and it's like, wait a minute, surely we'd have to have some setup. And it's like, okay, they're fucking with us. This is going somewhere. technically, that old man is a baby, so the bird kind of looking at him is like, eh, that's good enough.
they didn't even bother to shave off the mustache.
It's just a hairy baby. It's fine.
But Ubume is like fine about this. I do like the design of it as well. It's quite unsettling. It's kind of large crow bird looking thing, but it has these enormous eyes that don't have any other kind of features to them. They're sort of blank. It's kind of a, also got two little ears too, like a cat or something.
I don't know what's worse, like the weird blank eyes, but I think probably it's worse of seeing it swallow old man crybaby. that's not great.
Yeah.
So do you think they picked that one specifically for this episode because of the Momo scare thing?
What? Well, I don't know. I would think it's more because the mother-daughter relationship is kind of as well coming in on Banner's side, so we want to have something like that, but there was like a threat to the child, and I don't know.
This is a bird with what do you call that fucking thing? Empty nest syndrome or something like that.
Yeah.
Where it wants to protect its children and want to mind it. And yeah, that's obviously going to play into stuff later on. Yeah.
I'm not familiar enough with that Momo thing.
Oh, well, because the sculpture that's based on is of this, not of this design, but of this yokai.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Right.
I heard it's since been destroyed because the artist who created it didn't want to be parodied any kind of heinous behavior.
Hmm.
I think it's kind of, again, unsettling enough on its own. And for once, Ratman is not behind this. He actually just fell into the pitch for a cutest nest and just got press gang into taking care of all his babies that he's bringing back.
He's involved.
I'm glad we got one of those stories because I think that's a recurring theme in the stories of him falling into a hole and then being forced to do something.
Like, how dare you fall in my hole? Now you must serve me! Yeah.
Because, yeah, he's the character most likely to fall into a hole. It makes perfect sense.
Why, because everyone else can get out of the hole, or...?
No, I just feel like if there's a hole around, it seems likely that he'll be the one to fall into it.
Okay.
Because he's not very lucky.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I was going to say maybe it was luck, that he fell into the hole because it was like, because he drew them to this. And I was like, no, they fucking, they did the sting operation. And I was like, okay. It's just lucky for him that they showed up to free him from his servitude.
But yes, it turns out about his mum's got a job working at this company, which is being run by a guy, the brilliantly named John Doe.
Ah, that's so good. it's so obvious, but I love it.
Yep. Well enough, it's one of those eccentric billionaires. I'm not going to, must keep to himself not being a public guy.
The fact that he has like the fucking egg avatar, you know, the standard fucking one on the new app. I was just like, that's fucking, this is good. This is well done.
Mm.
And also, yeah, let's do an episode about talking about people who use the standard avatar. You know who the fuck they I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Both those guys.
Let's push this yokai narrative. You know, they're getting a lot of traction these days. That's like, almost more stories about them, by push them to the front page of all of our social media channels and so on and so forth. Yeah.
And doesn't the app allow you to identify them in the wild or something?
Yes, you can see you can kind look of through Pokemon them, Go. You can see
yes.
That's why I was like, hmm.
Or more like Yokai Watch, really, on the DS game.
Yeah.
It is, yes. No, it's, that's why I was going, like, okay, Nameless is, it must be, Keita, and he's using, basically, once he's got all five symbols onto Mana, then Yokai Watch can return. Which it does in April.
Oh, brilliant. He lifted the curse this episode. Good job, man.
He became a yokai. He was a Yokai Watch fan. He was just like consumed by his desire to get it, to see it back in the air. He missed it so much. He became a yokai himself.
Well, Keita does become a yokai in movie number two.
Oh my god!
When he obviously... which is the greatest start of a kids TV program gets a film. What do we do with like the first 10 minutes of the film? We kill the main character when he's not looking where he's going and falls down a manhole.
Oh, this is obviously from a dark universe. Then he crossed over to Kitaro world and starts raising trouble there.
The Shadow Side movie, so.
Mm.
They all tied together.
Something came back.
So they fake another baby kidnapping, don't they?
Is that related, or is that just an unrelated couple faking a baby kidnapping because they're just negligent?
No, Nanashi is trying to,
he is influencing
tell a certain narrative here. It's going to like, you know, make everybody love yokai so that when they get milkshake ducked, it'll be that much easier. But it's like, everyone loves yokai. The cuddly creatures who exist all around you. Get to inform me the yokai are stealing babies again. What?
I'm just wondering, was that a coincidental, baby, negligence fucking story or something?
I don't know if
it was. Or was it set up by him? I couldn't tell if it was set up by him because it wasn't the weird mist and everything, you know.
It was all planned by him. But he says outright, my whole plan was to fucking do this.
Okay, I was just wondering, was he taking advantage of this specific situation? Just waiting for anyone to take advantage of the situation of yokai being popular. That doesn't matter anyway. It worked out for him, basically.
That would kind of feed into him a little bit. He does, like...
own demise. He does
look into and bring out the worst aspects of people. So maybe he just, like, pessimistic kind of worldview would hold that if I just do this, then more likely than not, someone's going to try and do this for their own ends. If it's not Ratman, it'll be somebody else. So all I gotta do is bide my time, and then I can just, like, flip the whole thing upon saying, oh, look, I'm this... start flooding the chance of videos about fucking yokais stealing babies again. Get them out of our country. Get them all on an island somewhere.
And we basically have a lot of things of Mana reacting to fucking Twitter. And going like, oh, brilliant, yokai in their news. Oh, brilliant. It's a live stream of Kitaro saving the day. They're like, this is fucking class. I'm glad everyone's liking yokai. And then her friends goes like, yokai are weird now. Yeah, they're not cool anymore. She's like, what? But that's like my thing. So kind of it upsetting her specifically is kind of what Nanashi is after.
There's also a bit of commentary about the Yokai Watch craze, post-Yokai Watch craze of people going, it must be a work of a yokai as an excuse thing. That is commented on there as well.
Yeah.
About how great it is, yokai. You can just blame yokai. Anything bad happens, just blame a yokai.
Yeah. And that's as well, it's a wider thing. People are like, kind of relinquishing responsibility in their own lives to these like mysterious things that they can't talk about because it was a person. Oh, when like, we need to get out of Europe because quote unquote these immigrants that which simultaneously are taking all our jobs but also like living off a social welfare state are doing it. So that's why I must do this. Or it's no point in voting because it's all going to get hacked by Russia or some sort of that. It's kind of...
Yeah, trying to disincentivize this thing. Yeah.
You're being fed this thing, like, anything you do is pointless, or you can just, like, relinquish responsibility to this outside factor you don't fully understand and can't be fully explained.
I would nearly say that's reading into it too much, except for the fact that this fucking show has talked about immigration and integrating into society and shit before.
Those are just examples, say, but... people are more than willing to sort of throw up their hands. So what can we do? It's fucking climate change. It's always going to happen. What can we do?
Straight away. Yeah.
And sort of kind of being fed that narrative, often via the means of the internet and social media and shit like that. So, and who can control that narrative has a great, as an obscene amount of power in shaping public perception and just public motivation and their mindsets and worldviews about that.
It's almost like we're seeing that happen in the real world at the highest levels of office.
Yeah, it's almost like Kitaro, like noted fucking topical manga in the past, created by an author, an artist who was very much involved in portraying and being stories about social causes and history as it happened to him, experienced by him, might want to continue that spirit on in the new incarnation of the modern day.
Yeah,
how about that?
dear.
Ed Kira is not entirely blameless because him and Neke Masume, when they hear the news, immediately go to Yubume and go, "You've been stealing babies again."
I've been right here. You invited me to come live in the forest. I've been fucking right here. Quite a bit of back me up. You chat, was here all day. And make me and do a play acting with her.
But their accusation causes her to run off, and then she ends up getting attacked by humans later on.
Yeah, and those humans are being more directly influenced by hatred.
Yes.
By Nanashi, yeah.
So there's like an atmosphere of anti-yokai fucking hatred there. So Nick and Masume says, "It's probably for the best, Mana. You're my friend, I like you, but probably best for the time being if we just stay apart from each other until this dies down, until whatever happens to it." But
yes,
it is like a hard step for her to take and for the two of them to take, really.
Yes. And they're both being led into a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Some fine manipulating of all fucking sides here. It's pretty good.
I'm really hoping that behind the mask, Nanashi just looks like that bog standard Mizuki face, like the
like a big round head or something.
Yeah,
like that,
the everyday man with the glasses.
It's like the real monster is. I know. Just look to your left. Look to your right. One of these people is probably going to be some shadow ghost.
If only on the TV they could make behind the mask a mirror. Yeah, it's just some regular ass motherfucker.
Yeah, how's it go again? You get second point. Oh, got a call from your mother at the office. It says you should go and meet her there.
Yes. Yeah, the boss of the company wants to meet you.
And, yeah.
I think how her mother puts it.
Yeah, Neko Masume is told by the YouTuber that he was just doing what the president of Omega told him to do. And so she ends up there, and then she sees a monster, goes after it.
Or about Luthica monster.
Yes.
At least.
Well, I mean, like, it is like shooting banshee screams at her, so I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty good indicator that that's a monster.
But then, obviously, one doing the flips, gets the claws out, cuts this thing to ribbons. Okay, gotcha now. But then, whoa, wait. That wasn't the monster of a yokai. It was Mana's mam. And she's right next to me, isn't she? Yep. Oh. And that was fucking some, like, I think we got a big pool of blood right there. Like, Nana's getting right down it, like, getting her knees down into it. And, it's quite a gruesome scene for a children's cartoon.
It is. You see, I was like, oh, because I haven't seen the material for the next story after this. It's like, and the constant referral as Manor as being an empty vessel. I was like, is after this story's done, is she just doesn't exist? She never existed.
Oh shit! Geez, that'll be dark.
And when the mum died, I was like, oh yeah, I was further increasingly like, oh yeah, that might be where they're going with this. But then when Nekomasume also died, I was like, okay, there's going to be some sort of rewind on this.
Yeah, yeah. You can't kill off that classic character. That's not allowed. Mm. Yeah.
Still fucking, some fucking harsh fucking hits here. Manus man getting slashed up. Fucking Nekomasume getting the fucking key blast straight to the chest. Like, we know what she's back with, she's the yokai, you know, one, and then.
But her flame went out, that means she's super double dead. That's how that works.
No, it's something like, what, they can, like, regather essence, but it might take centuries to do so. For Mana, she would be effectively dead.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. But she's only got four of the signs in, so I'm gonna guess next episode that the distress of her mum dying and then her killing her own best friend after her own best friend killed her mum.
Wait, I thought that was the last one, no?
No, it's still only four when she does the blast.
Oh, only four.
Yeah, she's missing, what is it, water or something?
Water, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I thought that was it filling in, but it probably just showed me the thing again, and I just inferred it, yeah.
No, because I was presumably now she has to come and go, ooh, I'm going to make him a spooky voice.
Oh, that's right, he had to poke it on you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. That's, I guess, not too many episodes left of this story.
Hmm.
And then we go into, is it the Kings of Hell or something?
Yeah, there's like the four like, generals of hell. I forgot what that was again.
Yeah, some teenage boy.
It's weird to me, like, this isn't like the series finale. It's just like, and then it's just going to keep on fucking.
Well, that's
keeping
the thing.
On.
I wonder whether it is. And I wonder.
You think they're actually going to do a break here? I hope so. It's a good point.
Well, it's immediately starting in April, but I wonder how long the next bit is.
Okay.
I wonder whether it's like, oh, just give us 13 more episodes or 26 more episodes while we get Dragon Ball Super ready, please.
Right.
Because if this feels like this should be the end of the series entirely.
Yeah, it's definitely been building to this point.
And then go straight into like what seems to be like another season, another 13 episode long arc from the description. Makes me think, yeah, maybe that's all they're doing. Because I've never seen that happen before, where it's like, you just get like a weird number of episodes, because it's a necessity.
Mm.
But I won't say no to more Kitaro, that's for sure. Particularly as the next volume was apparently delayed a month, according to my Amazon order. I was looking forward to reading that today. Still, I'll have to make do tomorrow with Wheels on Meals Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all these blooming really nice Jackie Chan releases are destroying my bank account.
Well, I'm sure him and his subsidiaries will thank you for it.
Yes. Anything else? Is that the lot? I think that's the lot.
That's probably enough.
There was no surprise episodes of an anime this week. Got that to look forward to in April. Two returning champs, I think, in April for one-offs. Rightio, be back here next week for Clash and Talking Heads. Meanwhile, anything coming up on Secret of Sailor Madness?
To be recorded, about this time tomorrow. again, we're getting geared up for our eventual grappler backy, new version, watching. We're going to make sure we've got that system. The rest of that dropped yesterday at the time of recording, I believe. So we're going to get the rest of the gang, hopefully Anthony, hopefully Lewis, up on that as well. We can go into that. But to get ourselves all hyped up, we're looking at some other similar kind of violent or stylish things that never quite got a chance, never got beyond a trailer or a pilot or a demo.
and looking at those and see if, what if Becky can get another chance in this modern age, why maybe these can as well.
Maybe they deserve a shot.
Yeah, maybe not. They could have been a contender. A few little short things just to whet our appetites for the main course to come.
Over on Dynamite in the Brain, this week we've got Zero the Enforcer. Just me and Anthony watching last year's Detective Conan film that did so well at the box office. I think it's still roughly neck and neck between it and Dragon Ball Super at this point. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week. So, goodbye.
All right.
Bye.
Arrivederci.